820, Dave Carney back here with you. The award-winning WKTY Morning Show continues on. John Fogerty in center field leads us right to our great friend, resident raconteur, former PR director of the Chicago Cubs, sports author and sports journalist Bob Ibeck, Major League Baseball's commissioner in waiting, Bob Ibeck. Bob, top of the morning, my friend. We did a poll question last week after we had you on air, whether or not our audience wanted to see you as Major League Commissioner. Now, the ways that they could answer that poll question were yes, heck yes, and hell yes. And Bob, surprise, surprise, you were yeses all the way around. You're the next Major League Baseball Commissioner. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. My contract's in the mail, right?
Absolutely. You know what? Here's the thing. It's not going to be in the mail. They're going to pay you in non-fungible tokens and Bitcoin. So get ready for that experience. That should be very fun. Bob, I tell you what. I've mentioned this to our audience. I mentioned it to you off air. You are like a soothsayer. I almost feel like you're our own personal, like, futurist here, because you're just calling things well before any of us ever thought these would be things. Willie Adames for the Milwaukee
Brewers. You like him,
Brewers.
Huh?
Yeah. This guy's been fantastic. You nailed that one to a post. And you were talking about Kyle Schwarber a couple of weeks ago and how the Brewers should have gone out and acquired Kyle Schwarber, who is, on an absolute tear. Bob, what's next for us? I mean, are you going to give us gas and oil futures? I mean, can you help us with the lottery? I mean, what else you got for us?
I think I might quit when I'm ahead. But you know what? Schwarber, I always was enamored with Kyle. I had a chance to meet him a couple times at events here in Chicago. Just a nice guy. Big into, he's a kid out of Indiana. He's a Hoosier, you know, and does a lot of great off-the-field work for a fireman. He's really into, I think, he told me one time, had he not gone into baseball, he might have turned to become like a forest fire guy, you know, that
he
goes out.
He looks like he could be one of those guys.
Oh, yeah. He has that Babe Ruth approach at the plate. He slimmed down a little bit, so he doesn't have quite that same physique as the Babe had. But, I often thought if Kyle was messed up when he first came up a little bit because they had him swinging for the fences. But the kid can hit the other way. I've watched him hit balls to left field. And if he can get his average up, I told him one time, you just hit 250 with the amount of power that you get, because he's a 35 to 45 home run guy and probably a 75 to 90, maybe even 100 RBI guy. He's amazing. So he's taken really well to the batting in the leadoff spot Martinez put him in Washington, and he has just powdered the ball. And I was telling you off the air how his home run binge, I think it's like he went from 12 homers, he has 25 now, and he's done it in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been during this month, or during the month of June that was just over yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, it gave me a flashback to my youth, and I'm going to tell a story this morning about a guy that was, his nickname was Hondo. He's got Wisconsin roots because he grew up in the Green Bay area, and his name, Frank Howard. He was known affectionately in the Washington, D.C. area as the Washington Monument, or Hondo, or the other nickname that stuck with him was the Capital Punisher.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Now, that's the one I remember, because Havlicek, to me, was always Hondo. So I didn't really put that together with Frank Howard.
Yeah. Well, you know, the story here is, and it brings back me to my youth, and I mean my early youth, when I was working at Grand Union Supermarkets in the Washington, D.C. area, when I was in high school and in college, trying to make an extra dollar so I could get to college. And that's when I first met Frank Howard. And where I met him was in a grocery store, because at Grand Union, in those days, we used to have to go ahead and close the stores at 9 o'clock or 9:30 in the evenings, and then we'd reopen in the morning between 8:30 and 9. Well, one day I see this guy come in with no shirt on and just a pair of shorts and sneakers, and he's 6'7", and I'm looking at him. I said, "That's Frank Howard." Well, he lived right around the corner from where our store was, and he asked a favor. He said, "Can I come in here early and shop, like at 7:30 in the morning? So when you guys open, I'll have everything at the cash register. We can bag them up. I can bring the groceries home to my wife. She can put them away." They had 7 kids. He had a big family. And he says, "Then I got to get down and get the batting practice down at RFK Stadium," because he was playing for the Senators in those days. So I had no problem. I was his designated shopper because he needed two carts. So he'd come
seven
in.
Seven kids and his 6'7" frame, I'd imagine.
Oh, I was in charge of the cart to put the milk, the eggs, and the bread in because he would get like 7 gallons of milk. He'd get like 14 cartons of eggs and all these loaves of bread. And we'd go through the aisles, and we probably sometimes would end up with 3 carts. I'd get him up to the cash register. I'd check him out. Then I'd put his groceries in his car, and off he went. So Frank originally knew me as the kid who helped him shop on Saturday mornings, okay, at Grand Union.
So, Bob, let me just interject this real quick because we're talking to Bob Ibeck. You basically, again, so you've been a futurist now since your youth. You started what has now become the shopping craze where you just order online. You have somebody shop for you, and they put it in your grocery cart. I mean, at the time, you didn't know that you were making this kind of history, I'm sure.
No, I didn't, but it was a great pleasure to be around a major league ball player like that. And even during that time, we had an event at RFK Stadium, and we went out to the bullpen well prior to the game. And who was the guest celebrity? Frank Howard. He looks over at me. He says, "Oh my goodness!" He says, "There's my shopper." So he says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm just following you around, Frank." You know. Yeah. So now, about 2 years later, he spots me in the stands, in the lower left field grandstands. I was a senator's usher part-time going to college. He sees me over there. He says, "What are you doing in a uniform, an usher's uniform?" He says, "You're still hanging around me," because he played left field. And so then fast forward, I got a job with the Washington Post and the Baltimore Sun. So now I go down. I have my credentials. I go into the senator's locker room. I think it was 1970. He was there, and I got my little pad of paper getting ready to do an interview with him. He says, "How'd they let you in here?" He says, I said, "Frank, I'm a sports writer now." He says, "You're following me around." He says, "You started off in the bullpen as a kid. Then you were loading groceries for me. Now you're an usher, and now you're a sports writer." So I did a story with him there, and then years later I did another story when he was with the Tigers, finishing up his career.
Yeah.
Talked about some of his quirks in baseball, and then many years later after that, he was hired by Dallas Green, my former boss with the Chicago Cubs, who was the president and general manager of the Cubs. Dallas had moved on to become the Yankees manager. So Dallas invited me up for games at Old Miller Park. After the game, we all went out to dinner. His pitching coach was Billy Connors, who was with us in Chicago. Lee Ely was there for a little bit. And then I look over at the dinner table. Who is it? Frank Howard.
So does he ask you again, Bob, when you guys see each other? Because Frank Howard is, as far as I know, he's still alive now. He's in his mid-80s.
Yes, he is, yes.
But did Frank look at you again and go like, "Oh, my God, this one, now we're spanning decades, and I can't shake you"? I mean, this kid.
He laughed. And but we were telling stories. One of the great stories that we reminisced about was when he started his career with the L.A. Dodgers.
Yeah.
And he had struck out a couple times in that game, got removed. It was just, I think it was either his rookie year or his second year. And he went back to the dugout. Now, this is a big man. He took his both of his arms and his elbows and started banging them against the back concrete wall of the dugout.
Uh-oh.
So they were afraid, so they sent him into the locker room, and they said, "You got to get out of here, cool down." Well, he went back and literally cooled down because he went in and took a shower, but he was so mad that he went ahead and every shower he went ahead and he was so strong he took the faucets and turned them off so tight after the game. This is a true story. They had to get a plumber in there so the rest of the team could take a shower because he literally turned off about 10 different showers in his madness of walking around the room. So the last part of the Frank Howard story, and hopefully it's not the final, but it could be. My son Kevin, who was with the Tampa Bay Rays, last year, of course, they went to the World Series against the Dodgers. But the year before, the Washington Nationals were in the World Series against Houston.
Yeah.
So Kevin, as a favor to me and to my late father, because my dad always said, if you're a Senators fan back in the 60s, one day they'll get to the World Series. Well, he never did. But when Washington made it to the World Series against Houston, Kevin surprised me and got me tickets to the three home games in D.C. So we go back to the first night, and I'm right behind the Senators, I should say the Nationals dugout. Who comes out in a wheelchair? Frank Howard.
Bob, that's incredible.
They wheel him out to throw out the first ball because he was everything to Washington baseball fans. So now he's coming off the field, and he sees me behind the dugout. And, he yells out to me, "Bob!" He says, "I can't get rid of you."
He gives me
a salute.
That is fantastic. Bob Ibeck, our resident raconteur and somebody who is just getting all sorts of fawning comments sent to me here on the Talk and Text line. Bob, that's an incredible story, and I know that we had been planning to talk about it, but you know, when I hear you mention and describe some of this stuff, it seems like serendipity has followed you your entire life.
Well, in 1968, and this is where the story gets tied in with Kyle Schwarber, because Schwarber's had, he had 12 homers, and then he went from 12 to 25, so there's like 13 homers in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, back in May of 1968, Frank Howard, get this, had 10 homers in 20 at-bats.
Wow.
Let that sink in. He went to the plate 20 times and hit 10 homers in the first part of May in 1968.
Wow. And Frank Howard is somebody that, you know, I mean, I've always known about him. I love history and the Dodgers especially, where he started his career is, you know, the first place that I ever heard about him in Dodger history. I mean, this guy was a really good player. I mean, at 380-plus homers. I know he batted over 270 for a career, drove in over 1,000 runs. Is he a Hall of Famer, Bob? I can't recall.
No, he's not a Hall of Famer, although if you talk to the late groundskeeper there, he'd probably put him in the Hall of Fame, Joe Mooney, because Frank always paced. He could never stand still. Even at the plate, he was always fidgeting and everything else. Well, when he went out to play left field, Mooney used to keep his outfield and infield immaculate. It was green, beautiful, except for a patch in left field, because Frank would be out there, and like a panther, he'd go back and forth in left field, and he literally would wear out maybe a 10-foot area out there that was almost yellow all year long because he kept on wearing that grass down.
We know why that is, Bob, because your friend Ted Williams came back from World War II with all those vitamins, and they started putting them right outside of the locker room, you know, the clubhouse door. So Frank's like, "I'm 6'7". I need 5 of these things. You guys are having 2. I need 5. So it's not a surprise to me that he was just a bit jittery. Now, Bob, I've got to throw a couple of questions out here to you, and we've still got a lot of ground to cover with Bob Ibeck if you're just joining in. This, though, comes from Private Binks, the Binksonator. He is a huge baseball fan and somebody who would love to follow you around like you followed Frank Howard. Of that, I can assure you. Binks wants to know what your thoughts are. The Milwaukee Brewers, and we're going to talk about that game versus the Cubs yesterday and the whole series in which the Brewers swept. The Milwaukee Brewers are being rumored right now, Bob, to be looking at a first baseman from Colorado, C.J. Cron. What would your thoughts be about the Brewers acquiring the Rockies, C.J. Cron? The Rockies, by the way, are just, I mean, they're packing it in, especially after that Nolan Arenado trade this offseason. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, he's a streak hitter, you know. It's all or nothing with him. So he goes on these tears, you know, for, say a week, 10 days, and then he's a swing and miss guy. So if you're, you know, you'll fall in love with him for a week, and then you'll hate him for 10 days. You know, it's up and down. He's not consistent. But you know, if that wouldn't be a bad opportunity. I mean, the way the 29 runs in those two games. Of course, they won the in between game 2-1, but it was stunning. I mean, I'm coming back yesterday from a doctor's visit, and I'm listening to this thing in the car. When I walked in for the surgery, the Cubs were up 7-0 the first inning. Arrieta was pitching. I said, "Well, game over, right?"
Right.
Although Jake hasn't pitched as well this year, he's not taking his Flintstones, as I suspect. But that's a story for another day. But next thing I turn on, I told my wife. I said, "You know, this game's not over. This game's not over." I said, "By the time I get back out here and we're headed home, I bet the Brewers have cut this thing." And sure enough, it was 7-6 when I got back in the car to drive home. And then the next thing I look, and there's an 8 spot up there.
Yeah.
And, of course, Adames is in the middle of all this again. And what a wonderful, wonderful day for Brewers fans. And now the Cubs are, what, six games down.
Six games down.
and going to Cincinnati against a pretty tough Reds team, that's a make or break series for them. They go out and with the Brewers now going to Pittsburgh and playing the Bucks three games. Although the Bucks sometimes give them some trouble, I don't
they
know
have
why.
In years past, not this year though. The Milwaukee, they're not.
No.
I mean, 2-3 years ago they did. Listen, Bob, and I mentioned this morning. The Cubs yesterday did something that wasn't just noteworthy; it was downright historic. They became just the second franchise since 1900 to score seven or more runs in the first inning, only to lose a game, Bob, by seven or more runs. And I have to ask you if you can maybe pass this on to your son, Kevin, again, lead professional scout for the Tampa Bay Rays. The Brewers are willing to take any other Rays players they're not wanting. I'm just going to say that. So if the Rays just want to send somebody to Milwaukee, that would be fantastic, because you had correctly called that. Before Adames even played a game for the Milwaukee Brewers, you said, hey, watch out for this kid. He is going to be important, and he has been exactly that. Milwaukee does have that four-game set against Pittsburgh, but then there will be a three-game set against the New York Mets, who are actually celebrating Bobby Bonilla Day today. Bobby continues to get
a
paycheck. That's
right. More money for Bobby.
Continues to get a paycheck from the Mets, but you know what's funny? That's not going to be too dissimilar to what Christian Yelich is going to be getting from the Brewers, because they had put a lot of his salary in protracted years, so he'll be getting paid much like Bobby Bonilla does. Now, Bob, before we let you go this morning, because again, we want to see if we can't cover the gamut with you. We've already talked about this incredible run Kyle Schwarber's been on, and this Frank Howard tie-in, which is just, it's awesome, and a number of our listeners this morning are just freaking out again. Bob is just bringing the noise, and I'm like, I know. But Bob, the Milwaukee Bucks and Atlanta Hawks play game five of their Eastern Conference Finals series tonight. The Suns are awaiting now the winner of this Hawks and Bucks series. Phoenix winning 130-103 versus Los Angeles last evening. The Hawks are most likely going to be out without Trae Young. He is listed as questionable. And the Bucks are absolutely going to be without Giannis Antetokounmpo, listed as doubtful. Thank God he didn't suffer any structural damage to that knee, Bob. But this series, this is not a guarantee for either team. How are you approaching tonight's Game 5? Who do you think has the advantage, assuming that both Giannis and Trae Young don't play?
I think the Bucks do. I mean, Middleton's got to have a big game, and Holiday's got to come through. But if I'm the Hawks, I rest Trae Young, unless he's really, really ready to go, because you want him ready for Game 6 and 7, you know. And Giannis, I don't think he's going to play tonight, and I don't even know if he would play in a Game 6. Who knows? I mean, that's a pretty bad injury what he had, but I think the Bucks, because they're home, and if Young doesn't play and Giannis is out, if one equals one there, I think the Bucks survive, win at home off emotion. It's a must-win for them. They know that with the crowd there, and they go on to game. They go on to Game 6. I still think the Bucks could win this thing. What could be the downside is if Giannis doesn't if he doesn't recover fully, and they have to play Phoenix. I watched that game last night. Boy, Chris Paul was on fire with 41 points, and Devin Booker, they got a good ball club.
They sure do.
And they're hungry. Because I remember I actually covered the 1976 series when they played Boston.
That was
with
a great
Paul Westfield
series. And Gar Hurd, who, by the way, if there was a three-point shot back then, the Suns have a championship. Like, that's actually a thing.
Yep, they do. And then years later, it was a great series, six games, Barkley against Michael Jordan.
Yeah, sure was.
And they lost. So Phoenix has never won, and I believe the Bucks, the only time they ever won was when they beat the team I was covering, the old Baltimore Bullets. That was my first year with the Baltimore newspaper, and they wiped them out four games. But they had Oscar, they had Lou Alcindor, as he was known in those days.
Yep, they had Bobby Dandridge, who was also
and there was a guy that people overlooked, Bobby D.
You know what, and that's interesting, because Bob Ibeck joining the program, if you happen to be here, I wrote up the top five greatest Bucks players of all time maybe a year or so ago, and I know that this took a lot of heat, but I have Bobby Dandridge in there above a lot of others, like even, you know, I mean, even above like Ray Allen. I mean, Bobby Dandridge and what he did for not just the Bucks, but later the Washington Bullets. I mean, Bobby Dandridge in postseason play was exceptional. And no, look, the Bucks won in 71. They haven't been back to the finals since 74. Think about this for the four teams that were left. The Clippers, of course, they've never won a championship, and they'd never been to a conference finals. So they had gotten further than they had ever gone in their history as a team. The Suns have been to two championships, now three. The Atlanta Hawks, they won as the St. Louis Hawks, but they have never won a chip or been to a finals as an Atlanta Hawks team, far as I can recall. And the Bucks, their most recent win was 1971. The Bucks were the only team, Bob, amongst these four remaining that actually had a recent championship, you know, in the last 50 years. I mean, it was just crazy.
Yeah, it is. You know, and again, I go back with my own history lesson. You mentioned the Hawks. I remember that team that won it. I think it was 57. They finally beat Bill Russell and company.
They had
Bob Pettit and Cliff Hagan, who could back in those days, Cliff had an unbelievable hook shot. Now, people don't even know what a hook shot is anymore. But, I mean, Hagan, and then they had Slater Martin, who was there. He was their point guard. That was a great series, and it stunned the Celtics. And you take that victory away from the Celtics, and you know they had an amazing run for many, many years when they won, I think, like 11 titles in 12 years. It would have been even more of a stretch had the Hawks not interrupted them back in 57.
Well, absolutely, and you just mentioned, you know, some of those star players. As a matter of fact, it was Bob Pettit whose draft rights were traded for those of Bill Russell when Bill Russell was coming out of San Francisco, a little nerd out there with NBA history, and Bob Pettit was amongst the greatest power forwards of all time. If it weren't for the Celtics, and Bob, I don't like to diminish Boston's accomplishments and what they did, but there was eight teams in the NBA back then. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
And the Boston Celtics had undue advantages because Red Auerbach was one of the few that would actually put black players on his roster smartly because he knew they were better and they were going to win more games. But Bob Pettit was one of those guys that if NBA history was written any different and if he had been a Celtic,
he
would have been known as like one of the five greatest players of all time. As far as a power forward goes, I'm telling you what, kids, Bob Pettit and his footwork is actually something that you should study because that guy was amazing.
He really was. And they also had Clyde LaVellet on there, probably the sharpest elbows in the NBA. But for the fans listening in, fans listening in this morning, there were some teams, if you had a trivia contest and they said, you know, was there ever a team named the Fort Wayne Pistons or the Syracuse Nationals? There were teams in the NBA that you know, and it was amazing. I mean, I remember watching those games because always on Sundays they put them on TV, but every Sunday it was either the Lakers against Boston Boston against the Lakers.
Once
in a while Philadelphia snuck in there or Syracuse, but that was it.
Well, you know, and Syracuse, of course, had the great Dolph Schayes, whose son Dan Schayes ended up playing in the NBA for a number of years. But the Lakers, I mean, that was Jerry West. That was Elgin Baylor. And later on, it was, you know, guys like, of course, Wilt and Kareem. But, yeah, the Lakers versus the Celtics, especially the Jerry West, Elgin Baylor-led Lakers versus those Celtics teams. That, I mean, listen, I would go back in time to just watch those games, too.
Well, do you remember where L.A. first began?
Well, of course, in Minneapolis.
Yes, with Mikan.
Yes, of course, the first great big man. And by the way, this is another fun fact, Bob, as I've got to let you go. We've got our newsman, Scott Robert Shaw, tapping on my window here. The Minneapolis Lakers were used as a deterrent for bad behavior if you were, say, a Boston Celtics player. Because Red Auerbach would threaten to send you, and this is a quote, to the frozen tundra if you didn't do what it is that he wanted you to do. He's like, oh, you don't like it here? I'll send you to Minneapolis. And they're like, all right, we're going to be good. We'll be good. We'll be fine.
That is very true. In closing here, the same thing used to be said of the Clippers. If you don't behave, we're going to send you out to the San Diego Clippers.
Oh, I think they need to go back to San Diego. I have never appreciated the Los Angeles Clippers being in Los Angeles. Not even a little bit. San Diego, you've got a new team. You lost the Chargers, might as well take the Clippers. Bob,
that's right.
As always, such a pleasure to talk to you. Our audience is just fawning over the stories. And of course, this morning, I will post this interview separately from our Overtime podcast on Facebook, so that way we can do the sharing thing. Have a great rest of your day. Happy 4th of July, man. Really
mean same to you and all the listeners. Be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds great. Bob Ibeck. Follow him on Twitter, simply Bob Ibeck, B-O-B-I-B-A-C-H. And of course, listen in every Thursday as Bob joins the program. I've got to step aside, as mentioned, Scott Robert Schultz.